Now I'll call upon our Brother Jeff to give us the exhortation. Brother Jeff.
Good morning. Incidentally, the fraternal schedule is on the internet as well, on our website, victoriabiblestudy.ca, so if you're so inclined, you can find it there. And if you can't find it there, please let me know and I'll help you find it. We read about King Asa in 1 Kings 15, and that his feet became diseased in his last years. The parallel passage is in 2 Chronicles 16. And I wonder whether this physical shriveling of his feet was an indication of where he was spiritually. Was he still walking in God's way? By what the account tells us, it seems that he wasn't. What had gone right before this was he had made a deal with Baasha. Or not Baasha. He had made a deal with the king of Syria to get Baasha off his back, instead of trusting in God. And so Hanani was sent to condemn him for doing this, instead of going to God first. And he said in verse 7 of chapter 16 of 2 Chronicles, "Because you relied on the king of Aram and not on the Lord your God, the army of the king of Aram has escaped from your hand." And then he goes on to remind him of all those times that God had saved him, had saved Judah. All the times that he'd been with them, the Cushites, the Libyans, and the mighty array of great numbers. He reminds him of all these events that had taken place in his life. "Why aren't you listening to God now? Why aren't you going to God now?" he tells him. And Asa turns around angry and takes out his anger on the prophet and on the people, in fact. And we find that he hasn't looked to God when his feet are diseased. In verse 12, it says, "In the 39th year of the reign of Asa, he was afflicted with a disease in his feet. And though it was severe, even in his illness, he did not seek help from the Lord, but only the physicians." He didn't look to God. Although God knew all, Asa reacted in anger. And I find myself asking, where am I going? Where are we going? Which compass are we using? Are we trying to cover our tracks in our walk, or do we want people to follow us? We don't know for sure, for certain, how Asa will be judged. He was a good king. He did a lot of good things. But in the end, it appears that he lost faith. Where was he walking? Where was his heart at the end of his life? He endured with his disease for 2 more years before he died and didn't come to God. And sometimes I find myself in the trap of thinking that, well, the good that I've done in my life will somehow make up for all the bad that I've done and absolve me of sin, before catching myself and realizing that any sin we commit deserves death. And so the life I have is a gift. I haven't done enough good anyway in my life to outweigh the bad, I don't think. And so life is a gift, as is forgiveness. It's a gift, undeserved. And Jesus suffered when we come to our New Testament reading in Mark. Jesus suffered without deserving any of it. He did not deserve to be treated the way he did, the way he was. And so we receive an undeserved gift of this forgiveness, of a hope. So we should not complain that life is unfair, but rejoice that it's unfair, because if it were fair, we wouldn't have the hope that we have today. Speaking of walking, Jesus walked straight and unwavering, knowing his mortal fate, every step of his ministration. He knew his fate, yet he focused on the eternal end, the eternal glory and the joy set before him. Day by day, he was preparing himself for this day that we read about, where he'd stand wrongly accused and have to remain silent for sinners. Now, Pilate was amazed in chapter 15 of Mark, in verses 4 and 5, Jesus made no reply to the accusations. And so Pilate said to him, "Aren't you going to answer? See how many things they're accusing you of." But Jesus still made no reply, and Pilate was amazed. Why was he so amazed? If Jesus had made no answer, why was he amazed? Well, he would be forced to pronounce against him if nothing was said in his defense. And so he must have wondered, well, why doesn't he even try to defend himself? Why is he willing to walk to his own death, walk right into a death trap? The Matthew 27 account, in fact, emphasizes the incredulity. Getting my tongue around that word. And the amazement of Pilate at Jesus' silence. Back in chapter 14 of Mark, we read how the chief priests and the Sanhedrin mistreated him. In fact, in verse 65 of chapter 14, it says, "Then some began to spit at him, and they blindfolded him, and they struck him with their fists, and said, 'Prophesy.' And the guards took him and beat him." They certainly did this without care. They certainly did this with malice and with hatred. And yet, with all the power he had, with the truth on his side, he still walked on because he knew the death that he must die. He had dealt with this temptation of power before, throughout his life, and he was prepared for this moment. In fact, if you go back a few verses, he ensured his fate in the eyes of the leaders of the Sanhedrin by saying in verse 62, "And you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven." He knew what they were thinking. He knew that this would certainly seal his fate. And his fate was sealed in the Sanhedrin's eyes. And they figured they had him now. Jesus didn't just suffer for our sakes. He was in agony and pain. And you and I, we do our best to avoid any kind of pain. We have Tylenol, we have Advil. We do our best to avoid pain and to soften it. This is only natural. Yet Jesus, each day of his life, took another step towards it. And they weren't easy steps in his life either. It wasn't as if it was a pain-free life until the moment of his death. Each day was a battle. Each day was a battle against the Sadducees, against the Pharisees, and at times his own disciples. It was a battle against his human nature, against temptations that you and I also feel, yet without ever giving in. Because his feet were never found diseased. His steps were always sure and always firm. In John 13, we have the account of the washing of the disciples' feet. I'd just like to consider this for a moment. I don't think we need to read the whole section. We know how Jesus acted as a servant would in washing the disciples' feet. It was certainly a humbling act of service, but it was more than that. It was more than a simple act of service, more than a lesson to the disciples that you must serve one another. By his service, Jesus would make them clean. And in fact, Peter in verse 9 says, "Well then, Lord, not just my feet, but my head and my hands as well." Yet Jesus answered in verse 10, "A person who has had a bath needs only to wash his feet. His whole body is clean. And if you are clean, and sorry, you are clean, though not every one of you." By his service, Jesus would make them clean. Not just his service here and now, washing the disciples' feet, but in his service through his death. He would open a path for them to walk. They had already committed themselves to the way, and now they were about to walk it. Without Jesus' death, they certainly wouldn't be able to walk the way. But Jesus was showing them that this way would be open, that they would walk it. Let's remember the words of Psalm 56. Psalm 56 verse 11 says, "In God I trust, I shall not be afraid. What can man do to me?" Surely these words were going through Jesus' mind. He must have recalled these words. In John 19, after Pilate had told him, "Don't you realize that I have the power to crucify you or to free you?" Jesus responds, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of greater sin." The power over his walk was not Pilate's, because he trusted in God. He was not afraid. He was prepared and he walked assuredly. Psalm 56 goes on in verse 13 to speak of our walk, saying, "For you have delivered my soul from death, yes, my feet from falling, that I may walk before God in the light of life." Let's put our diseased feet on the right path. Because if we can do that, then our prayer of faith will bring the healing that we need to walk a sure and firm path to eternal life. And so let us do as Proverbs 4 tells us, and ponder the path of our feet, and all your ways will be sure.